Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Dermot Dwyer is a well-known businessman in Ireland. He worked for years in hospitality and tourism, and he was the executive chairman of the Convention Centre and of Setanta Sports. He founded the Caroline Foundation with his wife Helen in memory of his daughter Caroline. Dennis, Dermot's son, is a film producer and documentary maker. Last year, father and son visited five countries in an area called the Levant: Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Israel and Palestine. A devastated, fearful region not used to the sight of Irish tourists. Why they went there, what they saw, what they learned, feature in a book called Desert Bonds, a father and son's Middle East odyssey. And they're here with me this morning. Dermot and Dennis, good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Miriam.
It's a great book. Listen, Dermot, you had been to the region before, hadn't you? Why did you want to go back?
I was there, Miriam, briefly on a small assignment because my business partner at the time wasn't able to go in 1995. That included going to Damascus to do a kind of a small assignment, which was kind of might have been part of the peace process at that time, had the peace process continued. And I always promised myself that I'd go back. And it never happened. But then when I saw the Michael Palin documentary on Into Iraq and read his book, I said, well, maybe this is the opportunity to go back. And we contacted, or I contacted the same fixers that he had. And that was the start of it. And it was they who arranged for us to get into Syria. And then we backfilled everything after that.
Because it's politically unstable. You know, it's a very difficult area to choose to go to. When did he mention it to you, Dennis?
Probably a year before we were due to go. And like, Dad had been enchanted, particularly by Damascus. And, you know, I was very excited to go with him then. He also has a friend, Moisha, who he worked with back in the 1980s, who lives in Jerusalem and who's had health problems. So Dad was very keen to see him. And I suppose for Dad to be able to go, it was important for me to be able to come along. You know, as we got closer to the date, obviously the conflict had ignited in Israel and Palestine. And it seemed uncertain whether we would be able to go at all. Mm-hmm. But I suppose we were taking advice from people in the consulates and from the fixers themselves. And, you know, while the skies had been closed to commercial flights the week before we were due to leave after the embassy bombing in Damascus, the morning we were due to fly, the skies reopened again and we were able to go.
A sign from God. But tell me about like practicalities, precautions. How easy was it to say, for instance, to get travel insurance? Did your tour company ask you to do certain things or not do certain things, Dermot?
The tour company we had was really just for the Syria bit. Every other bit we did ourselves. But the tour company, which is called Untamed Borders, insisted we had insurance. And we had some difficulty. We have VHI worldwide, but that didn't exactly cover Syria or Israel or Lebanon. So eventually we found an insurer and we got it for Lebanon, for Syria and for Jordan, but not for Israel. Eventually, my friend Moisha in Israel, I mentioned that to him and he said, look, we'll get you Israeli insurance because, you know, they want people to come to Israel.
And Dennis, you were a reluctant enough traveller to Israel. Why were you in two minds about going there?
I'm still in two minds now as to whether we should have been there. You know, I suppose, given the assault on Gaza as retaliation for the Hamas attacks, you know, and the feelings of a lot of people in Ireland about boycotting aspects of Israeli commerce. You know, I suppose I was nervous about being in the country and having to listen to viewpoints that might have been very challenging. But at the same time, I suppose when we actually got there, a lot of my preconceptions were challenged in that we met an awful lot of Israeli people who were more open-minded and broad-minded than we might have expected.
And also, Dermot, you had good experience as well as Irish visitors, not just in Israel, but with Arabs, didn't you? How were you received? Quite well, I think.
Very well. Miriam, the welcome we received everywhere was extraordinary. You know, all the five countries, it was quite extraordinary. You know, I think Dennis at one stage or somebody else said we were probably the only tourists in town. We certainly appeared to be because right through Syria, everybody welcomed us. Nobody asked us for anything. There was no begging. There was no.
I think in Syria, for a lot of people, they hadn't seen a tourist in over 13 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing tourists maybe gave them a sign of hope that things were changing.
And what were the conditions, though, like in Syria? More than, you know, a decade on of war, we see here the news. It just looks devastation, building in ruins. What was it like?
I mean, you could drive through parts of Syria for 30 minutes and every single building you would see would be destroyed. Aleppo, which is one of the great cities of the Silk Road, one of the oldest continuously inhabited places on Earth, you know, half that city is destroyed. And yet at the same time, everywhere you look, you see hope and optimism as well. You know, in the Al Medina Souk in Aleppo, we met a architecture student called Ahmed, and he was in touch just last week, sending me pictures of his architectural drawings. Now he's qualified and working for a firm about housing projects they're building in Aleppo. So you see the talent and the I suppose, the ability of the Syrian people to look forwards.
Syria, one of the, there are several places Dennis has mentioned, Aleppo. I think the one that I'd like to really mention is Palmyra. Palmyra is this extraordinary place in the middle of the desert. It was a famous city. It's some of the best archaeological ruins in the world. And yet it had been a headquarter for ISIS and had been bombed and levelled. And we were the only people there on the day. It had been a town nearby of 50,000. It was now only 10,000. And as Dennis said, everything was destroyed.
And of course, Dennis, you were in Syria when Assad was still in charge. You're both described in the book as a hideous regime. Did you get any sense when you were there that his family's era was coming to an end?
Not particularly. Mm. What we, I suppose, saw was the parts of the country that we were taken to visit were well protected by military checkpoints, right? But having said that, you would see, and there's not too many major roads in Syria, so if they could make those roads defensible, the regime were able to maintain a certain level of stability, or so it seemed at the time. But you would drive past the checkpoints and many of the soldiers would be wearing completely different uniforms or shades or whatever. You know, it was clear that their you know, salaries weren't great and whatnot. And although our guide, who was amazing, Taizir, brought us to parts of Syria which we were able to visit, you would have conversations with people, you know, in hushed tones about how their lives were difficult, you know. A Christian DJ in Damascus saying he would do anything to get out of the country, but there was no avenue to do so at the time. So, I mean, when we saw the scenes in December of the outpouring of emotion on the streets of Damascus, it was really it was wonderful. And so with luck, there's a better future for the Syrian people because they deserve it.
Did your thinking about the Middle East change completely since going there or not?
I mean, it is so nuanced and complex between the languages and the faiths and the history laid on top of it, different civilizations. I mean, very much so. But having said that, I also think, you know, I'm very proud of the perspective and stance taken by Irish people, and particularly our Taoiseach the Taoiseach and President.
And there were two really interesting people you met in particular in Israel and Palestine. Who are Ron and Judith Lobel?
Dr. Ron Lobel and his wife Judith. He's the head of emergency medicine in the 600-bed hospital on the border with Gaza in a place called Ashkelon. And Ron invited us to his home. And his home was 200 metres from the wall, the Gaza wall, and the gates of Gaza. And they'd been living there all their life. He had been part of the health service over Gaza and Israel in that area. And just like you have in Dublin, you have one hospital that's twinned with another hospital. You might have the Mater twinned with Vincent's. There, his hospital had been twinned with the major hospital in Gaza. Two-thirds of his staff of 3,000 were Palestinians. On the day, the 7th of October, their house was bombed and 20 of their neighbours were killed and they were locked in the basement and got out. But on that day, his hospital handled 400 life and death emergency cases from all sides. And they were continuing to live there and they were kind of happy to live there. But we were in their house And as Dennis will tell you, we could hear rockets in the background, and we could hear rifle shots. 7 miles further up the road, we stopped in the seafront in Ashkelon. McDonald's was full. This is in the Israel side. Kids were on skateboards. People were learning how to sail. It just felt like two worlds, and they were literally 7 miles apart. And as we had coming into Israel originally, we saw these hundreds of trucks all held, not being let into Gaza. When I rang Helen after our first night in Jerusalem to say we'd arrived, she said, how are things there? And I said, well, actually, it's busier and buzzier than Dublin. The Lewis was running their version of the Lewis. The shops were all open. We went to a concert, a symphony concert. It was like through Israel, there were very little signs that it was a war right next door. And it brought me back, Miriam, a lot to my time in tourism and the 30 years of the Troubles in Ireland, trying to persuade people to come to Ireland that it was safe. And my friend Moisha had said to me, he'd come to stay with us years beforehand, and he'd said, God, you have a very troubled land here in Ireland. And now we were staying with him, and it was a very troubled country, but there was not much sign of it. Yeah.
And just somebody, you know, in terms of unexpected encounters, Moisha arranged for us to have a guided tour of Jerusalem with his friend Martin Goldberg. And Martin had stopped being a guide because he didn't want to be told what he couldn't say about the government. But he was doing it as a favour to Moisha. But now he works with an organisation to protect Palestinian farmers from having their land stolen, and they put their lives at risk as well to do that work. So there's a lot of, as Ron Lobel spoke about the hospital and the collaboration across communities, there are bubbles of sanity in a sea of madness, as the phrase was given to us.
I'm watching you as a father and son. It's a lovely relationship. You're coming up to 80, Dermot, although you look about 60. And Dennis, you're in your 40s. Were you a bit daunted by the idea, I suppose, of travelling together, whether you'd get on as well as you normally do? And what did you learn about Dermot, by the way, Dennis, that you didn't know before?
He likes arriving to airports at least 4 hours before any flight. And he's a good roommate because he keeps his side of the room very clean. So I've a lot to learn from him. Look, it was strange, you know what I mean? But also brilliant. And it's definitely brought us closer together. Like, we definitely argue, debate, discuss on a regular basis, but we're just fascinated in similar things, history, culture and politics, you know. So
the one thing, Miriam, we were on the move all the time for 22 days. We didn't stop, but we got on fine. We had a couple of breaks. Dennis went off on a tour one place one day that I didn't go on. But we had a good time, and it was something special to share. It wasn't climbing a mountain. It wasn't going to a seaside. It was very unusual.
Because Dad fancied us as Indiana Jones and his father Henry.
Because I know you a bit, Dermot, Dennis, because of the charity you set up in the name of your daughter. I think, was she only 33 when she died of cancer?
Yeah.
The Caroline Foundation. You set that up with your wife, Helen. But I know from Dennis that your first wife, Fidelma, died. Your mum died, Dennis.
That's right.
When you were only 7.
That's right.
And Caroline was 10.
That's right.
In a way, did you have a very close relationship with your dad because you were so young when your mother died?
Yes, unusually so, I would say. Yeah. No, and Dad has gave Caroline and me wonderful opportunities to travel from a young age. And as a single father, probably had to deal with things that most people never did. And, there was extraordinary strength of character in being able to do that.
He didn't turn out too bad,
He turned out fabulous. But you always, because I've said it to you before, and you always dismiss anything you've been through. But look, it's still a lot.
Thank you. Yeah.
Your first wife died, very young, leaving you with two young children. And then your daughter died of cancer. That's so, but you've always remained very positive, Dermot.
We've tried to remain positive. But I've been blessed. My second wife, Helen, we're married nearly 30 years. She is just such a stalwart and has been just so good to all of us taking us all on, because she took Dennis and Caroline and four dogs.
The four dogs probably were more trouble.
Now we have a new dog.
Yeah. And when you travelled, did you both take Caroline with you? Because, there were just the two of you, Dennis, and Caroline.
Yeah.
Do you talk about her much? I'm interested. A sister of mine died at 33 from cancer, so I talk about her all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, is she just always lingering in the background, or do you talk about her or not?
We do. We always try to remember happy occurrences and moments. And I think, you know, both of us privately probably talk to her spirit still.
Oh yeah, she's the guardian angel. She's the one. She's the one that gives us a kick in the backside. You know?
What do you think she'd make of your current adventure?
She would just probably say we were daft, but she would. She would certainly have encouraged it, and Helen encouraged it as well. You know, well, if you think that's a good idea, off you go, lads.
And you must be very proud, Dennis, I suppose, of the work that your dad and Helen, your stepmom, have done in keeping, I suppose, Caroline's legacy alive through the Caroline Foundation.
Just so Ellen and Dad and a committee of fantastic volunteers and people like yourself supporting Miriam, over 2 million euros was donated and raised to support targeted cancer research through Professor John Crown's Foundation. Mm. So it's been a wonderful way to turn a great tragedy into something wonderfully positive. And as well as that, you know, thousands of people around the country came together for various events such as world record ribbon chains and teddy bear gatherings and sing songs and all sorts of wonderful stuff. So it's been a nice part of our lives since.
Now, where's your next journey?
Go on. West Cork.
West Cork, yeah. Good idea. But you've turned it into a book. It's a great read, actually. It's just very interesting.
Thank you. I mean, if you think travelling around the Middle East is stressful, try writing a book with your dad.
If I might just mention that on the second last day we were in Jerusalem, I went into a shop. Now, there are no tourists anywhere in Jerusalem to buy a small present for Helen. Asked how would I want to pay. I said I want to pay by credit card. The manager, a lady, came over with the credit card machine. I said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Ireland, from Dublin. And she said, oh God, that's terrible. You have the riots and you have the emigrants and you have the buses on fire and the universities are closed in Dublin. It's much safer here.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's whatever lens you look through things at. But the one thing I would encourage anybody, take the trip. Go to the places the road that might be less travelled. You'll always be welcome. And we really weren't in danger anywhere we were there. And it was lovely to meet the people and to see the resilience of everybody.
And I think what definitely hit home to both of us is that what people have in common everywhere is far more powerful than any differences.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you. It's a wonderful read. Dermot, Dennis Dwyer, thanks you both very much for coming in this morning. Your book is called Desert Bonds, A Father and Son's Middle East Odyssey. And it is published by Orla Kelly Publishing. Congratulations on it and thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
Thanks for having us.